Brewers Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
7-5 The Crew. Josh Maurer back with you in Pittsburgh. Highlights are brought to you by Prevea Health, led by passionate and accomplished doctors who always focus on you. Prevea Health, doctor-led, specializing in you. This was a back-and-forth affair. You figured coming into it that runs might be at a premium. Each team had its ace on the hill. Mitch Keller for the Pirates, Freddie Peralta making his fifth start of the season for the Crew. Keller got the first out in the first inning, but then William Contreras stepped to the plate and did this.
And he'll throw him a lot. This is driven out to left center field. Racing back is Sawinski. He will look up and watch it leave. William Contreras with number 5 on the season. And the Brewers take a 1-0 lead here in the top of the first.
Leave it did. As we told you just a few minutes ago, the longest home run for the Brewers all season. 448 feet made it 1-0. But in the bottom of that inning, Freddie Peralta gave up a 3-run home run to the Pirates cleanup batter, Joey Bart. He hit a blast himself, and it was all of a sudden a 3-1 Pittsburgh lead. Brewers came back, and they started to chip away in the third inning after Keller issued back-to-back walks to begin the frame. Willie Adames struck out, but Jake Bowers got the first of his two hits on the day, an RBI single that made it 3-2. Still 2-1 and one out, and the next batter was a man who'd have a big day, Rhys Hoskins. Here's Rhys Hoskins with runners on the corners. Line drive into right field. A play for Brian Reynolds coming on in. Goes into a dive. He didn't catch it. It eluded him and goes to the sidewall. In from third with the tying run is Contreras. Bowers thought it was going to be caught, so he only makes it to second base. And it's an RBI blooping single by Rhys Hoskins. The Brewers have tied the game at 3 in the third inning. That's all they would get there, but Peralta was settling in. Scoreless baseball in the second, third, and fourth innings, and then the Brewers got him a lead in the fifth. Keller was still out there. After a hit by William Contreras put him aboard for the third time already in this game, he stole second base, and with two outs and Keller around 100 pitches, here's what Rhys Hoskins did this time.
The 2-2 lined into left field. Sawinski coming over, goes into a dive, and he didn't make the catch. It popped out of his glove. Contreras around third. He will score. Hoskins on his way into second with an RBI double, and the Brewers have taken the lead. It's 4-3 Milwaukee.
How about that? Twice in the span of three innings, Hoskins hit a ball that the Pittsburgh outfielder made a dive at and did not catch. Brewers had a 4-3 lead, but Peralta ran out of gas. Perhaps with two out in the fifth, he walked Joey Bart, Jack Sawinski, hit a wall ball RBI double to right that tied the game, and Jared Triola was the final batter that Freddie would face. He blooped an RBI single. All of a sudden, two runs were in, and it was 5-4 Pittsburgh. Peralta, just 4 2/3 innings, permitted those 5 runs, 10 base runners. Not his best effort, but the offense picked him up here today. It remained 5-4 all the way into the eighth inning, and that is when the flame-throwing veteran Aroldis Chapman came in for Pittsburgh. Blake Perkins began the rally with a swinging bunt infield single, but he was still on second base with two outs, and that's when the pinch hitter, former teammate of Chapman's in New York, Gary Sanchez, fell behind 0-2.
Nothing in two here on Sanchez. Chapman looks back at second, takes a big, deep breath, and the pitch. High fly ball out to right. Back is Reynolds at the track. Wall gone! El Kraken gives the Brewers the lead in the top of the eighth inning. Sanchez, his third of the year, and oh, is it a big one here in Pittsburgh.
It was his second of this series. That bat coming to life. A 102-mile-an-hour Aroldis Chapman fastball that Gary hit out. 6-5 Brewers. Yoel Piamps got the eighth inning today, and he stranded a leadoff double. So it remained a one-run lead into the ninth, and against reliever Roansy Contreras, Brewers got two on with one out for Oliver Dunn.
2-0 pitch. Dunn, a ground ball through the right side and into right field for a base hit. Adames will score. Stopping at second is Bowers. Some insurance from Ollie Dunn. And the Brewers take a 7-5 lead.
Had to feel good for Oliver Dunn. That's all Milwaukee would get. They handed the ball to Trevor McGill for the home ninth. In his 103rd career Major League appearance, he was finally able to get his first big league save. It ended with this off the bat of Jack Sawinski.
McGill kicks the leg, fires the pitch, lifts one out towards left. It is slicing towards Weimer. He's there. He squeezes it, and the Brewers finish it off this afternoon with a 7-5 victory. They earn a split in Pittsburgh and a 5-2 road trip to their two division rivals.
And how about this? Today ended a stretch of 13 out of 16 games being played on the road. The Brewers went 10-6 during that stretch. As mentioned earlier, every road trip they've had has been a winning one, 5-2 this time. And they're coming home to face the Yankees. We will preview game one when we come back to wrap up the Potawatomi Sportsbook postgame on the Brewers Radio Network.
It's more than living, it's living well. Now might be the right time to consider the advantages of assisted living. Schmidt Woodland Hills is offering all private rooms in their Westview assisted living community. We are fully staffed and prepared to care for your loved ones with the dignity and respect they deserve. When only the highest quality of care will do, remember Schmidt Woodland Hills. Call Westview manager Bobby Stoltz at 608-647-8931 with questions or for more information.
The Milwaukee Brewers play here all season long. Catch the game on us, WRCE FM 107.7 and AM 1450 in Richland Center.
Milwaukee Brewer Baseball from WRCE Radio is sponsored by Jones Chevrolet Buick, A&W Restaurant, Badgerland Flooring, Clary Memorial Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Meister Log and Lumber Company, Napa Auto and Truck Parts, Bailey Paint and Decorating, Papa's Trading Post, Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, Richland Electric Cooperative, Schmidt Woodland Hills, The Shoebox, Walsh's Ace, McFarland's Manufacturing, All-American Do-It Center, and Goplin Insurance.
You work hard for what you have and rely on your income to provide for your family. But what happens if you're unable to work due to illness or injury? Hi, this is Ryan at State Farm in Richland Center. With a disability policy, you receive monthly benefits that will help pay your basic monthly expenses, such as the rent, mortgage, utilities, groceries, or other bills. Let's talk about putting a plan in place now that can help protect your income, your way of life, your financial future. Like a good neighbor, Julie Karen State Farm is there.
The Todd Alba Show.
Luke, I'm just going to say it again. The real problem here was that goofy in-season soccer tournament that they had. That threw everything
off. What are you talking about? That was December basketball. You just couldn't figure out the rules.
You're exactly right. There are goofy rules I couldn't figure out. I don't like them.
You would not do well with driving on the left-hand side of the road.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely
not. You would just start freaking out.
Yeah. The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Brewers 7 and the Pittsburgh Pirates 5. Back to wrap up our Potawatomi Sportsbook postgame. Josh Maurer here from PNC Park. Brewers will not visit Pittsburgh for another 5 months. Their last game here until the 24th of September. They end up going 2-2 on the trip here. 5-2 overall if you combine the sweep in St. Louis. Let's wrap up by going down on the farm, brought to you by Blaine's Farm and Fleet. Stop by for all of your lawn and garden needs like fertilizer, gardening supplies, lawnmowers, and so much more. Shop online, farmandfleet.com. At the AAA level tonight, Aaron Ashby is on the mound for the Nashville Sounds. They're at Louisville. That one will be at 5:35 Central, and Ashby is a guy who you're going to have to keep your eye on with all the injuries to the big league starting rotation. It'd be great to have Aaron be healthy and effective enough to come back up to join the Brewers. Thus far, he's got a 9.28 AAA earned run average. Well, the Brewers coming home. After this stretch of 13 of 16 away, they've got six in a row against very tough opposition. Out of the American League East, the Yankees for three, and then the Tampa Bay Rays for three. Tomorrow night, the on-deck show built by Menards gets underway at 6:35, 7:10 first pitch. And Luis Gil for the Yankees gets the ball. Colin Ray, who has been steady Eddie early in the season for the Brewers, he's going to get the ball against Aaron Boone's bunch. That includes, of course, Juan Soto and big Aaron Judge. Hope to see you. the park. If not, we will be talking to you here tomorrow night. Josh Maurer for Lane Grindle and the Pirates. So long, everyone.
Earl Ingram.
In Wisconsin, parents pay one-third of their income on child care. Think about what we need our income for. Shelter, food, clothing, gas bill, electric bill. And we're talking about one child. This is a crisis. Young families are saddled with what is almost impossible to deal with.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station. And
the sexual assault against this guy, Carlton Huffman, and their insurance company paid out a $480,000 settlement. That's the guy we're talking about. Well, that's one of the guys we're talking about. The other is the new executive director at the Wisconsin GOP. Might I just add, Republican Party's in disarray.
Dominic, there's just a little bit more here. Because remember what I used to always do? Whenever someone would have really bad news, they'd get arrested, indicted, whatever the case may be. If you Googled their name next to Scott Walker, invariably, there'd be a photograph with him and, you know, Serge or Maria Butina.
Right, his Russian girlfriend.
Or really any ne'er-do-well in the Republican Party. I mean, Scott Walker's on a rope line with at least a photograph taken of those people. Not that those count. Who told us that? Trump in court. That doesn't count. That doesn't rope line. Right. E. Jean Carroll doesn't count because, you know, I only met her on a celebrity rope line. Interesting headline I find here, Dom. That Carlton Huffman guy. North Carolina legislative staffer with Wisconsin ties. History of extremist views. Well, Dom, apparently he resigned. And this January of last year, 2023, just a little bit from the Wisconsin Examiner, Carlton Huffman had a long record of espousing controversial views about race, immigrants, and North Carolina history. Go Tar Heels! Before he started a job with the General Assembly earlier this month, and according to an online staff listing, Huffman, who previously worked for the Republican Party of Wisconsin, that's probably the Scott Walker connection, and was political director of the Fond du Lac County District Attorney Eric Toney's campaign for Attorney General. Did you know all that, Dom?
Only from the article from Vice.
And was on the staff of the Joint Legislative Committee of Government Operations working for the House Republican majority. That brief tenure ended yesterday. However, when first reported by WRAL, Raleigh's news leader, Dom, Huffman resigned. And Huffman appeared on, where do they always go? Righty Whitey Talk Radio in 2009 and 10 called the Political Cesspool. On one episode, he discussed cultural genocide in the South. In another, about European politics, Huffman praised Dutch politician Geert Wilder as a firebrand critic of Islam who stands up for our European people. He lauded the far-right British National Party, which wants to end all immigration into Britain, for standing up for white Europeans left in Great Britain. One of those guys, Dom, an anonymous tip about
a lot of those guys around these days.
Emailed to journalists Wednesday included links to political cesspool radio interviews and blog posts to which Huffman allegedly used a pseudonym. See what I did there, Dom?
Good job, Crudy.
I still think it should be pseudonym, but anyways. Yeah. An anonymous tip about Huffman Huffman told WRAL he was once a member of the White Supremacist Council of Christian Citizens, but left when it openly expressed anti-Semitism.
You got to draw the line somewhere, man.
Now, Huffman did not return a phone call to this place seeking information, but that's interesting. I just wanted to get that on the record as well, because I'm learning about this man's character in real time, Dom.
We are. Jumping down in the bottom of the piece of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel from Daniel Bice. He worked after Trump's defeat in 2020. Huffman went to work in the 2022 cycle for a couple unsuccessful Republican campaigns. Gubernatorial candidate Kevin Nicholson, I didn't know that one. You already mentioned Attorney General candidate Eric Toney. Then Huffman, a native of North Carolina, headed south to help out then U.S. Senate candidate Herschel Walker. And we all know how that worked out.
You know, there's more here right from the get-go on this guy. I think I undersold the Bice piece, the page six. Carlton Huffman isn't the best source for a story. That's how he started, and I kind of jumped around. Here's how he writes it. Daniel Bice, blackballed from the party he used to work for, bound by a restraining order for sending a threatening and racist message to a Republican Party official, fired from his North Carolina job after his old white supremacist views came to light and accused last year of sexual battery. But Huffman, a 40-year-old, former, it says, GOP operative, that's only because he's unemployable, has something no one disputes, a couple of provocative 2020 text messages from Andrew Iverson, the new executive director of the Wisconsin Republican Party.
And wait, so the new executive director from the Wisconsin Republican Party,
yes,
is communicating with this former GOP operative who espoused racist views.
He's this a good guy. Wisconsin boy.
Okay. Just want to be clear on who we're talking about.
So the new guy, Andrew Iverson, the new executive director of the Wisconsin Republican Party, he's the one that sent out these new text messages, Tom. So 2 days before the 2020 election, on November 3rd, that would be 2020, I guess, Tom, Iverson told the people on then-President Donald Trump's campaign in Wisconsin to continue to fan the flame and get the word out about Democrats trying to steal this election.
Yeah, there you go. You're not a good, honorable, and loyal Republican mega GOP operative if you don't push the big lie.
Well, the party line, the big lie, Dom, was already started days before the election, right? Weeks, months. But then Iverson, at that time, the state head of Trump victory, Dom.
Victory!
A joint operation of the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee. That's the one they could take the massive donations at the end, right? They all had a victory campaign. Just be on standby in case there's any stunts we need to pull.
Oh, that's what the executive director of the Wisconsin Republican Party said right before the 2020 election. Well, be on standby in case there's any stunts we need to pull.
Well, Dom, but one political stunt may have already been broached. Here's the stunt we talk about on election day 2020. 2 days earlier, Iverson sent two text messages to Huffman, who was then the Trump Victory State Strategic Initiative Director. They've all got very exciting titles now. We need bigger titles. Encouraging him to get a bunch of Trump supporters to fill Souls to the Polls, a Black Get Out the Vote organization with requests to be taken to go vote. You know, here's the interesting part. We'll come back. We'll tell you how this story turns out. But I suspect they would have gotten the rides.
Yeah,
they would. Now, how well they would have been received in their full MAGA regalia in Metro Milwaukee? You know, and when they showed up and people watched them march in because they're going to their own polling places and realized, well, maybe these people don't exist.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
State Senator Kelda Royce in Richland County. UW System made the unilateral decision to completely vacate the campus by July 1st of this year.
It's so short-sighted to think it costs a little bit more money to run it and there aren't as many students, so let's just shut it down. A smart business owner would say now is the time to invest because we know every person that comes through the door, you're going to get 40-fold the investment from how they're going to be able to give back to our state.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. News from the center, WRCE.
Welcome back, Wisconsin, and happy Earth Week, everybody. If you've been listening and tuning in a little bit this week, you know we're giving away 3 trash pickers. I picked one up for myself, I guess pun intended, about a month ago, and have been carrying it along with me whenever I go on my walks around my neighborhood. It's great. I get to pick up the trash, and everything looks better, and it will make you feel a little bit better. Just a small way that you can contribute to conservation here in Wisconsin. If you'd like to qualify, please use the app, text in your name, email address and phone number, and you will be in the running for one of the 3 trash pickers we're giving away this week. But right now, we're joined by Carrie Schumann, Executive Director of Wisconsin Conservation Voters. You can find more information about Carrie's organization at conservationvoters.org. Welcome back, Carrie. We've been talking about a number of the initiatives and information sharing that you've been doing for Wisconsin voters. And I wanted to ask you about 2 specific things that are going on legislatively. You mentioned PFAS in the last segment. I know a little bit about that because in my old job as Corporation Counsel for Milwaukee County, I initiated a lawsuit against the PFAS manufacturers and distributors. We stand in an interesting moment. Clearly, everybody knows that PFAS and these forever chemicals are a problem. And yet there's $120 million that's sitting allocated in our biennial budget that hasn't moved out of the Joint Finance Committee. What's going on there, Carrie?
Yeah, this is a really big issue. So, you know, the legislature and the governor in the budget, that state budget from last, that started last year, or was passed last year, they passed $125 million to get these PFAS out of our drinking water. This is a really big deal because PFAS have some of the longest list of health consequences I've ever seen of any chemical. The list just goes on and on. It's everything from multiple types of cancers to kidney damage to
birth defects.
Yes. I was just going to say birth defects and how children are developing, how they're affected. So it has these incredible effects. We have to do something about it. We have found it at this point in over 70 water systems in the state. And also it's in rural areas. So it's, you know, if you're on a private drinking well, which is a lot of Wisconsinites, it's just a reminder, if you're on a private drinking well, test your well every year, because this is one of many things that could be in it. But that $125 million is sitting there. The Joint Finance Committee and the state legislature really needs to release that money so that the DNR can give it out in the form of grants to communities that are dealing with cleanup of PFAS problems and cleanup of their drinking water. So, you know, if you wanted to do an activity for Earth Week that gets you in the middle of one of the most important things happening in Wisconsin right now, I'd say go to the Wisconsin legislature's website, look up the Joint Finance Committee, send them emails asking them to release that $125 million for PFAS cleanup. It is so, so important. So I think that is a great Earth Week activity you could do.
Love to hear about that. It's and just so folks are aware, it's caught up on this technicality in the spending or the... The budget allocation happened. Usually that provides the governor with the authority to spend it. Effectively, some Republicans in the legislature sort of put a little caveat and didn't give him authority to spend it. So they have to reauthorize through legislation and they can't agree how to spend it. This is one of those things where I have to say to legislative Republicans, let's get the money to communities. Let communities decide how to spend the money. and get folks the help that they need. It's been far, far too long. The other thing I want
to... That's right. And communities know what their problems are. They know where they need to get to the source. They know what they need to do. They just need the money to do it.
100%. You know, local control, et cetera, et cetera. I want to ask you about one more element that is going on, and that's going to be on the ballot this coming August, which is so important. People are focused on November, but we've got an August election cycle as well. There's two constitutional amendments that Wisconsin Conservation Voters is trying to educate folks about. Tell people what they are.
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked about this because, you know, there may not be a lot on your ballot in August in terms of candidate primaries. And if there's not, people might just say, oh, I'm not going to vote. We need you to vote. Really, really important to vote in the August primary this year. The reason is the Republicans in the legislature put two constitutional amendments on the ballot that basically would hamstring the governor from allocating federal funding. This plays out in a whole bunch of different ways. The amendments are saying the legislature would need to sign off on federal funding. So let's think about how that plays out.
Worked really well with the PFAS, didn't it? Yeah, let's bog right, down emergency funding. I mean, it makes no sense.
Well, yeah. And so imagine you live in a town and a tornado comes through and you need money into your community right away for the emergency that you're in. Right now, the federal government gives money. The governor just turns it around and just gives it to the community so they can do what they need to do, whether it's medical supplies or temporary housing or whatever needs to happen. That would have to go through the legislature. It is not a fast-acting body, first of all. And secondly, there are a whole set of people in the legislature who sort of are anti-federal money. I mean, it's a kind of a parochial thing. And so they could literally stop it from going forward. So that's one reason we're very opposed to this. The other reason is there is a lot of federal money coming into Wisconsin for, as I mentioned before, clean energy and climate action and lead pipe abatement and a lot of things that affect the environment and your health more, just as importantly as your health. And if that had to go through, all of those had to go through the legislature, one, they could just block it, or two, it takes so long that meanwhile, your family is still drinking contaminated water or breathing unhealthy air. So absolutely go to the ballot for the August election and vote no on the constitutional amendments. And I will say they're written in a way that is not clear, which is deliberate.
Big surprise. Every time a constitutional amendment comes through this gerrymandered, unfair, not a one person, one vote legislature, they're worded in a way to basically trick people, which begs the question, if you want to have some say in how the government's, the governor is allocating federal funds, you could, you know, try to adopt a state law, which then goes through a process. But you know that the governor, elected by an actual majority of Wisconsin voters, would veto that. So they're end running around the entire democratic process with confusing language meant to dupe people into making it harder for communities to get the emergency aid that they need so that their kids and families have clean air and clean water and that chemical spills and PFAS remediation can actually occur in a timely way to help protect our families' health. Am I getting that mostly correct?
You're getting that very right. Yes. Yes. Yep, absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, I really thank you for your time. Again, where can people find out more about conservation voters, more about the PFAS remediation, more about the two amendments on the ballot, as well as how to make their homes more energy efficient?
Yeah, so you can find all of that on our website. Again, it's conservationvoters.org. And we have everything you just talked about on there. In addition, there will soon be information up about the fall elections, and you can see who the candidates are that we've endorsed in your part of the state. Those will be on starting in probably about June. So it's a great place. You can also see what bills are up in the legislature with our vote tracker. There's just lots of great resources on all of these issues.
I know I'll be checking it out. My deep thanks to Carrie Schumann. Happy Earth Day, Carrie, Executive Director of Wisconsin Conservation Voters. Don't go anywhere, everybody. Your farm update is next, and I'll be back with my good friend Rob Henkin, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, after these brief messages.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
It's important to take proper steps before and after planting to better control the weeds. And Rodrigo Worley, UW Extension Cropping Systems Weed Specialist, explains what questions he's been getting.
So the main one that I have received so far is the carryover situation. So herbicides that were applied last year to our crops, are they going to carry over into this year's? I think, you know, the locations that have received enough precipitation here more recently, I think that's really going to help reduce the likelihood of carryover. I think overall, we're in a good situation as far as, you know, reduced possibility of carryover. So that is the first thing.
That was Rodrigo Worley, UW Extension Cropping Systems Weed Specialist. He added that the fields that had a lot of weeds last year are going to be the challenging fields this year. So don't skimp out on control this year, because you're going to be going up against perhaps a pretty tough situation with some heavy weed seed banks. I'll have a look at your closing markets right after this.
Just in time for the grilling season, Bavaria Sausage expanding their retail hours. Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke here, fresh off a visit to Bavaria Sausage at the corner of Nesbitt Road, Fitchrona Road in Fitchburg. Now open Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, 9 a.m. until 6 p.m. Those are the expanded days of operation, giving you wonderful opportunities to step in and get ready for your grilling supplies, like their always popular red lager beer brats. Take a look at the smoked bratwurst. Maybe you're looking at some of the pre-cooked bratwursts they've got available. Whatever you're looking for, they've got it ready for the grill. And check back often, because I'm really impressed with some of the new flavors that are being developed by Bavaria Sausage. Always with respect to the old world traditions, but also adding a new zing to some of our traditional favorites, like Landjagers. Start shopping now, BavariaSausage.com.
I'm Charity Seebecker from the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your closing markets. Cash corn closed at 437 and three quarters, down 5 1/4 cents. New crop corn closed at 472 and three quarters, down 2 cents. Cash beans closed at 1166, that's down 1 1/2 cents. And new crop beans closed at 1174 and a half, and that is up a half. Cash wheat closed at 594 and a half, that's up 9 1/2 cents. And new crop wheat closed at 613, and that is up 10 1/4 cents. On the dairy side of things now, May Class 3 milk contract is trading at 1774, that's down 39 cents, and June milk is trading at 1790, down 32 cents. Barrel cheese closed at 177 with no change. 40-pound block cheese closed down 2 cents at 174, and the double A butter closed at 296 and 3 quarters, and that is down a quarter. From the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
A high-pressure system continues to sit overhead today, keeping us happy under sunny skies and highs soaring to 60 degrees. Winds begin to get a little feisty tonight as showers and thunderstorms strike us tomorrow. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 61.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba.
In honor of National Cheeseball Day, what food totally disgusts you? For me, it's anything where cheese is crammed together and soft. Why you would put it all into a ball or a log or a loaf, I don't understand. What about you, Conrad? You got a disgusting food?
I like tuna. It just can't be from in a can. It just has the worst smell in me. I just think it's nasty.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba, weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk.
When you have a fully funded, privatized voucher system, Heather, help us out.
Wisconsin has made a choice to disinvest from the public good and put money into a wholly unaccountable system and just let their political cronies laugh all the way to the bank while our kids pay the price.
Busted Pencils with Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny, weeknights at 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinere and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we'll do some recombobulating with Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, then all things entertainment with Matt Miller. Make sure you join us.
Matinere on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Don't
don't pick up the phone. You know he's only calling because he's drunk and alone. Two, don't let him in. You'll have to kick him out again. Three, don't be his friend. You know you're going to wake up in his bed in the morning.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. Hope y'all are enjoying some sun. We've got beautiful weather down here in southeastern Wisconsin. A little cool, but beautiful. It's 3:34 in the afternoon. And my next guest is my friend and yours, Rob Henkin, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Welcome back, Rob. Always great to have you.
Thanks so much for having me, Maggie.
We just celebrated 420 Day, and it seemed only appropriate to ask my favorite policy wonk about what's going on with Wisconsin marijuana policy. Are we ever going to legalize it? You shared with me, and I want to just show the folks that are watching online, the report and even the report summary from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. I thought the map that you all put together that basically shows that most of the folks in the largest urban areas and that, you know, are within border distance of where our sister states adjacent to the state. Listen, if you live on the edge of the state, you can drive 60, 75 minutes and get your hands on some weed. But the vast interior of our state doesn't have that, luxury, if you will. What's going on here, Rob? Where are we as a state in terms of potential legalization?
So, Maggie, this is an issue that has been debated for many years. Obviously, the Wisconsin Policy Forum takes no position whatsoever on either legalization of marijuana for medical uses or for recreational uses. But we did decide to dig back into this a year and a half ago or so, because increasingly we're an island. And it's not a matter of, well, gee, if our neighbors are doing it, so should we. It's a matter of that raises some very practical policy considerations. We found, and at the time that we did this report, recreational usage was not legal in Minnesota, only a medical marijuana program. So this has now even changed more. But in fact, and this was actually 2023 when we revisited this, as of January of last year, 50% of all Wisconsinites of legal age, so about 2.2 million individuals, lived within a 75-minute drive of a legal recreational marijuana dispensary. And so just given that reality, does that change the calculus at all? Should it change the calculus at all for our policymakers? If weed is so easy to get, by simply getting in your car and buying it and bringing it back across state borders, which is illegal, but certainly makes things easier, should that in any way impact how our legislature is thinking about this?
I think that at the root of it, when you look at some of the data that your organization put together last year, Rob, it's pretty striking. I mean, our neighboring states are reaping enormous revenue benefits for the sale of recreational and medical marijuana. And, you know, I think it's pretty safe to presume that a bunch of Wisconsinites are probably driving to get it and creating a bunch of tax revenue for our sister adjacent states. Did WPF dig into potential revenue upsides if we were to entertain legalization?
Yep. So, this has been proposed by Governor Evers in his budget. There have been revenue calculations made at that time, certainly in the tens of millions of dollars per year per the approach that the governor was suggesting. So I don't have that number at my fingertips, but what I can tell you is we looked at Illinois, and they track out-of-state purchases because they tax out-of-state purchases differently. And close to 30% of all recreational marijuana sales in the state of Illinois are made by out-of-state residents. So I can't tell you of that 30% what percentage of that is Wisconsin residents, but Intuition would tell me that it's a pretty sizable percentage. And so again, this isn't about, gee, why should we, if our neighbor told us to jump off the Empire State Building, would we do that? It's about the reality that we do have Wisconsinites purchasing marijuana. They're just doing it elsewhere, and those tax revenues are going elsewhere. And so one of the things we're suggesting, and again, we are not trying to influence the policy debate, but frankly, one of the benefits of having waited so long and having been able to see what other states are doing and how they're doing it is that there is a lot to learn from these other states. And so if we do reach the point where recreational usage is seriously being considered, and I don't think we're at that point yet, I think we have reached the point where across party lines, a medical program is being considered. But when we do reach that point, we could really learn a lot in terms of how we would structure our program, in terms of how other states have tried to make sure that we have people of color having every opportunity to actually own dispensaries and reap some of those benefits, arguably in return for the disproportionate numbers with which people of color have been arrested for minor marijuana infractions over the years. So, you know, name your policy objective. We could learn from others what they've done right and also what they've done wrong.
It's an excuse me for the frog in my throat, by the way, Rob. Appreciate your patience with that. It's one of these moments to me as a public policy wonk and as somebody that cares about outcomes, that when you couple it with some of the polling data from Marquette University's polls, it seems to me like a no-brainer. Again, without taking any position as the policy forum about pro or con, is there some insight into what the resistance remain? Why does there remain such resistance to this obvious source of pretty robust revenue? We're losing it anyways. It's going to other states. That there could be boost to small business owners, and that in some small way, it would be a small step to try to address the disproportionate arrest and incarceration of Black and brown folks when all the research says that people smoke and use marijuana in equal proportions across racial groups. Where's the resistance coming from as far as you can tell?
Yeah. So first of all, I was going to joke the frog in your throat, Maggie. You took too big a toke from your bong in the intermission, but I won't go there. I'm not a public health expert. I happen to believe, my opinion, not the Wisconsin Policy Forum's, that there are some legitimate public health concerns in my mind around access for minors. Mm-hmm. That to the extent that you have dispensaries, certainly it would be easier for minors to be able to get people who are of legal age to purchase for them, for example. And again, we could probably argue just how much easier would it be, you know, given how easy it is for a legal adult to purchase cannabis in Wisconsin. But I think that there are some legitimate public health concerns around access to minors. I think there are some legitimate public health and public safety concerns regarding impaired driving. And I think another benefit of having waited, and there are plenty of detriments also to having waited, because we haven't taken advantage of these revenue opportunities. But one benefit is there has been more and more research on issues like impaired driving in places like Colorado, and also on the various steps that law enforcement can take to try to curb that. So again, as I hear the debate, I think those are still some of the concerns. We still have this gateway issue. I'm not a public health expert, so I don't want to go there. I think many of us who grew up in the 60s and 70s, the whole gateway suggestion sort of doesn't have a lot of credibility. But be that as it may, there are some legitimate policy grounds. However, what we keep on coming back to is, if it's happening anyway, and it is so easy to get in your car and get it, to what degree does that shift the balance? Even if you have 10 pros and 10 cons, is that increasingly a big enough pro in terms of legalization that it does alter the calculus.
Yeah, to me, I mean, at base, people ask me, what are your politics, Maggie? And, well, you're real left, or why are you so fiscally hawkish about this? I often respond to people, I'm a pragmatist. It happens more often than not for certain sets of reasons that maybe that sounds left. But I just want stuff to work for the greatest majority of us, for it to work efficiently and effectively. And it seems to me we're coming up on that pragmatic, like, wait a minute, this just seems a little silly. We can address these, if you believe them, public policy or health concerns, because all of this stuff is happening anyways. I mean, again, I live in southeastern Wisconsin, but there's not a day that I drive anywhere in my car where I'm not downwind of someone who, even with windows rolled up in the dead of winter, I'm smelling extraordinarily pungent odor of marijuana just driving down the street. It wasn't like this 10 years ago. So there's clearly people are availing themselves of our neighboring states that have fully legalized marijuana. I really appreciate you digging into this with me, as well as your incredibly funny humor. Rob, you continue to impress me with how utterly cool of a dude you are. I wanted to also ask you about something a little bit more wonky. And that is, the WPF came out with an analysis of the state budget surplus and what's going on with that. Where can people find both your February 2023 report on marijuana in Wisconsin, as well as your most recent report from last week about where we stand with the state surplus?
Just go to wispolicyforum.org, click on our research tab, and you can search for any of those reports. Just type in ganja and you'll get our whole marijuana. I'm kidding. type in marijuana in the search engine and you should see our body of work, because we've also done work in this area, just looking at how different municipalities across the state have different ordinances. And that's arguably another reason to consider, because you can go in one municipality in Wisconsin, and if you are caught with a certain amount of marijuana on you, you could be penalized in a dramatically different way than in a neighboring jurisdiction. And is that good public policy?
I'd argue no. It just doesn't make any sense. And also to this point, it seems to me that there is incredibly wide variation in sentencing from county to county for state level offenses. There also seems to me to be incredible variation in recent time about how local municipal police marijuana use and possession writ large. I mean, it for many folks in and around, if you live in the city of Milwaukee, it's like, cops are not going to bother with that. They just have more important fish to fry, especially given some of the personnel constraints. It may get added as a charge if you've got other criminal charges, but as standalone, police in Milwaukee largely are considered colloquially to be sort of out of the policing business exclusively as it relates to marijuana. My guest this segment has been Rob Henkin from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Can you stick around for another segment, Rob? Do you have time this afternoon?
Absolutely.
Awesome. We're going to dig into where the state budget surplus sits. What does this mean? It's going down, but why? How should it be allocated? Because, of course, they just published another great report helping us all better understand where our tax dollars are going in state government. So don't go anywhere, anybody. We'll be right back talking more with my friend and yours, Rob Henkin of the Wisconsin Policy Forum. If you have questions for myself or Rob, pick up the phone or text us, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. I'm Maggie Dawn here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back in just a moment. You ain't getting over him. I got no rules, I count him.
Pushing forwards, but he keeps pulling me backwards.
Nowhere to turn, nowhere to turn.
No, now I'm standing back from it. I finally see the pattern.
I never loved
him. He doesn't love me, so I tell myself.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
The Todd Almaz Show.
Luke, I'm just going to say it again. The real problem here was that goofy in-season soccer tournament that they had. That threw everything
That's
off.
That's not... What are you talking about? That was December off. Basketball. You just couldn't figure out the rules,
You're exactly
Todd.
Right. There are goofy rules I couldn't figure out. I don't like them.
You would not do well with driving on the left-hand side of the road.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely
you would just start freaking out. Yeah.
The Todd Almaz Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. News from the Center, WRCE.
Wisconsin. It's the last segment of the Maggie Dawn Show here on a sunny but chilly Thursday afternoon. Joining me this half hour is Rob Henkin, the executive director of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, helping us all be better educated voters and citizens. Rob, your organization just came out with a significant new report last week that addresses this enormous state budget surplus, in part, which many of us have been watching and thinking and arguing about, both at the state governmental level and local governmental level. Again, what's the upshot? Where does the surplus stand? And where is the debate right now about what to do about it, if anything?
Yep. So, Maggie, this is really a very fascinating issue because, first of all, who could possibly find fault with having a big budget surplus? Well, you know, as I talk to people, it's certainly better than having a big budget deficit, as those of us who, you and I, who have worked for Milwaukee County government certainly know. But having too big a surplus, an immediate reaction is, well, given all of the need that we have, why aren't we spending more of this money? And in this case, ironically, it's because there were competing proposals during the last state budget deliberations about how to spend down this surplus. The Republicans largely wanted to do a lot more with regard to tax cuts. The Democrats wanted to do a lot more with regard to early childhood education, K-12 education, some other priorities. They couldn't agree, so nothing happened, so that surplus didn't get spent down, and in fact, per the report that we released last week, has now grown. So by the end of the 2023 fiscal year, as of June 30th, 2023, the state's general fund balance was $6.7 billion. That's more than $1,100 for each Wisconsin resident. And again, having a good surplus and rainy day reserves, very healthy. But this is certainly, it's 42% bigger than the previous year. And so an argument could be made that some of those dollars could be spent. Now, it's supposed to grow even more to a little over $7 billion by the end of this fiscal year. However, then it is projected to start to decline because there were some tax cuts in the current state budget, and there was some spending that could not be paid for with ongoing revenues. And so it's projected to decline to roughly $3.8 billion. So it was about $7.1 billion heading into this calendar year. We'll be down to about $3.8 billion by the end of June, but that's still a pretty healthy surplus.
So instead of $1,100 per Wisconsinite, maybe 350, 375-ish. I'm being cheeky, but you get my point. When we look at, I mean, this seems to me to be one of those quintessential conservative, liberal, fundamental policy questions. And I keep coming back to this, whether it's about marijuana or how to spend the surplus or whether to spend it on tax cuts or early childhood education. Is there someone standing around saying, well, we can do a little bit of both and let's make sure the tax cuts are going to the middle class and we can help fund K-12 and early childhood education? We can perhaps even consider thinking about trying to prop up our child care system in Wisconsin, which is unquestionably in crisis. Is there someone that's out there trying to propose a middle road through this most classic policy dispute?
Maggie, I mean, I think that's what has changed so much just over the past decade or so in terms of our politics. I mean, again, you see such an avenue here for compromise. The objection of the Democrats was to tax reductions for the highest tax bracket in our state. Yet the Republicans also wanted tax cuts for lower brackets. So why not agree on some tax cuts for those lower brackets? Republicans have acknowledged that early childhood and having sufficient child care slots is just essential for our economy, if for no other reason. And so, boy, isn't there room for some compromise on that issue? And so, yeah, you would see the dimensions of compromise, but, you know, increasingly, and I blame both sides, you have to get your way 100% or else you're a rhino or whatever the Democrat equivalent of a rhino is. And so, you know, diplomacy and compromise are dirty words, and so we get nothing. And so in this case, from the perspective of a fiscal hawk like myself, getting nothing wasn't the worst thing in the world because we have a very healthy surplus. But again, we're not investing in things that we arguably need to invest in,
which most of us all agree we need. Most importantly, the voters. Anya, of course, offering we got rhinos and dinos. Are they both dying breeds? Boy, ain't that a shame. It's emblematic. I think, Rob, I appreciate your candor on that point that again, the things that help benefit the vast majority of Wisconsinites are the things that we need to demand our elected officials get done, especially when we're in crisis mode. In other words, inaction on PFAS, inaction on childcare, inaction on early childhood education, inaction on tax cuts for middle and lower tax brackets. That's unacceptable. Thanks again for being here with me, Rob. It's always a pleasure. We'll see Rob Henken again in a few weeks. He's the executive director of the place that I rely on for most of my policy analysis, and I encourage you to do so as well. It is objective. It is reliable. They always take great care to paint the data picture visually as well. So if you don't like the words and the tables, don't worry. There'll be a chart. Again, Rob Henken of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, my thanks to you, sir. Happy Earth Week.
Happy Earth Week to you, Maggie, and thanks again for having me.
Of course. Everybody, I'm Maggie Dawn, and as always and ever, she's Anya Esther. And as I leave every show, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But remember, it's best when we stand together. That's it for this Thursday edition. Stay tuned for the Devil's Advocates here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. Pete Schwabba.
On my next show, I welcome brewery owner and classically trained singer Kirk Bangstad and singer Brentley Brehm and host of Civic Media's Max Inc., Terry Barr.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast form? Search no more. Find it now on the WRCE website at WRCE.fm, your news just for the Richland Center area. I'm Joanne Krulatz with WRCE News.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.